Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I'm your host, Kyle, and today we finally managed to connect Purdue and Chris Dover together for an episode. If you missed Chris's first visit to the shop, I'll make sure it's linked in the show notes. Chris also runs a newsletter at pollinatetrading.com, and he also posts things that piss off everyone on Twitter under the handle at Chris D. Macro. I always want to say Marco on there. Sorry.
You're not the only one.
Purdue, is there anything you want to add to help hype up today's guest?
Chris is the one that got me actually to think about trading as a business and to actually think about trading not in a discretionary manner, but in a educated manner. That, in other words, I've back-tested, researched, and strategized my opportunities rather than just clicking random buttons.
I got to say, I think I remember when you had that conversation, like probably about the time you started working with them, you came back to me and Joel and you put a real fucking boot up our ass about trying to make sure that things get back tested properly.
Yeah, I think that was back in 2022-ish.
Sounds
Chris is
right.
The one that made me write a business trading plan.
Yeah.
Yep. Or inspired,
okay,
I should say.
Okay. Okay. So
I did that. Yeah, talking. I didn't make you. You don't make Purdue do stuff.
Oh God, I know. Well, I've been meaning to get a little bit deeper into backtesting with you, Chris, but you posted something last week that just really caught my eye. The ways that you use and the ways that you were telling people they can use language learning models, and it wasn't just in trading, but there's also multiple other useful applications you mentioned on that post, which I'll make sure that gets linked to. So I do want to spend some time picking your brain on that subject, but maybe first, if we could just take a step back and maybe get a better understanding of what a language learning model actually is and what it's actually doing. So I think that way, maybe we can better understand some of the limitations of the systems.
Sure. Yeah. So we're talking about LLMs, large language models. That's kind of the term, but you know them probably as ChatGPT, Claude, yeah. Gemini, Llama. Most people know ChatGPT. It is... kind of, I'll give like just as simple explanation I can.
Yeah.
Not for any other reason other than it just doesn't need to be too hard.
Right. Okay.
They are very big and complex, and they do a whole lot of witchcraft in the background, which is, you know, part of the fun and the controversy of them. But at the same time, what they've done is they just go consume a massive amount of data. Mm-hmm. At this point, these LLMs pretty much have consumed the entire internet and everything ever published and digitized. And whether that's audio, video, you know, anything, that is what the back end is by now. That's 2 years in. Like, right. we're not even 2 years in. That was in November of 2022 when that like first launched. ChatGPT kind of came on the scene. So we're less than 2 years in.
Wow.
And what it does is it basically just learns patterns. So it's intelligent in its ability to predict the next thing that it should do.
That's such a weird way of thinking about it. It's trying to think more than about like what words make sense to this query it's gotten like that.
It's kind of a simple way to do it. Yeah. So a lot of people think about it as a search engine, which it's not.
Yeah.
A search engine goes to a indexed database and find something that has been created already.
Right.
You want band, like tell me about backtesting trading, and Band of Traders, an episode of Band of Traders will show up.
Right. Right.
In the Google search, for example, perhaps because it has been indexed and it's already been created. Whereas if you go to an LLM and you say, tell me about backtesting, for trading, it'll basically go read every book and get everything that it like knows about that subject to create a response. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely fast and pretty darn good. If you were able to just go and get every single book on the entire subject, every single podcast, every video, every research paper, everything on the subject, and somehow they are able to just organize it into an answer for you, mm-hmm. that is, it may not be accurate.
Yeah, that's kind of the question I had, because it seems like it's going to give more weight to more material that's published in a certain way, right? So if more people believe that the Earth is round, then it's going to be more likely to give you answer your queries, taking in that into consideration, right?
Or you could tell me, answer me this as if somebody who believes the world is flat.
Ah, okay.
Because it has consumed,
right?
It has consumed very logical or very like well built models of why the Earth would be flat. And so it's just like, okay, let's go.
No, that makes a lot of sense then, why it's so important that you get the question right. Because I think that's a lot of where people struggle when using these things or trying to apply them, is trying to figure out how to word their question the way to get the answer that they want.
Yeah, that's, you get better at
it. Yeah, yeah.
A really good way to do it is if you think about hiring somebody for a job, okay? Now, they've met the basic requirements of, let's say, knowledge or
having a pulse.
Yeah. It's up to you. Right. You know, it's kind of however you want to hire for the job. Let's say you're hiring, because we're talking about it, the world of artificial intelligence or something like that. Probably like a PhD student or a grad student or somebody, you know, that's spent, 4 to 8 years in academia. And now they're coming to work for you. And so, you know, you've got some, okay, there's some firepower here to work with, but also
that doesn't have the experience necessarily that comes with all that knowledge.
Right. And they've been, most of the time, they've been kind of like given, this is what you're going to do by their lab that they're working in or something like that, you know? So they're just kind of like. And so what you need to do is you need to kind of train it up to get it to where it needs to be. And that's kind of where we're at. If it just so happens that this grad student you have, for lack of a better term, I'm a college, barely made it through the first, not really, I did 2 years, but
yeah,
I'm self-taught mostly.
Me too. Don't feel bad.
Do not. I saved myself a lot of money. I married into a lot of college debt. So, you know, the attorney, wife of mine. It comes in with like a foundational knowledge of everything, just not like a narrow excellence in anything. And that's kind of probably where we're going to get to, is taking these really, like if you had the power of Google, Google search, just focused on being able to answer questions about trading and backtesting, and, you know, the returns in your queries, you didn't even have to like tell it, don't return Investopedia data. Don't return the street.com type stuff. Don't return earnings reports when all I'm looking for is rate of change on price action. Narrowing into your Google queries. Boom, you get it. And then all you have to say to it is like, you know, how's Apple versus Google look right now? And it understands like all these other things that you've like, okay, I'm looking for rate of change, velocity of volume, like excess volume in a period of time, above a moving average, below a moving average, you know, like distance to its earnings, like things that you just decide to say, it can kind of have all that built in.
So it has the history of all your past conversations with it, and then it uses that to infer meaning in the other questions you're asking.
You can train it to do it how you want. So you don't even need to have the past data in there. You can go in there. Like I have prompts that basically, you know, we're looking at, I don't know, 200-400 word prompts, so that it's just saying like, you're in this role. You are an AI researcher that focuses on this. You're at a, you know, top tier, high frequency trading hedge fund. You focus on writing in Python in Google Colab notebooks. Everything is done in the cloud, not on the local device. You only deal with US stock market data from this data feed, maybe, or you just kind of like tell it what it is. You give it its guardrails, and then it just, instead of having to go and create everything, it knows what you're specifically after, is kind of way.
That's funny. I never thought of them as like priming statements, but like, I remember when it first came out, trying to get it to do anything trading related was very difficult. It wouldn't give you any strategies saying it can't do that, or it was you know, outside of what it was allowed to give back as an answer.
Yeah.
But the way you get around that was by telling it was writing a screenplay for a person who's in this particular situation, and then it would go ahead and spit out the answer then.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So priming seems like it's pretty important to, thing to help get you more focused results, kind of like what you're looking for.
Yeah. And so the various different LLMs have these things called context windows, which so I can create a custom ChatGPT, for example, that has, one of them I've created has 30 or so books about Python, algorithmic trading, math, you know, things like that specifically. And we're talking, you know, 1,000-page books. Huh. I've created a special one that I just uploaded all that data. And so now that's, it's like, it's called a context window. Like, okay, when I'm talking to you, we're talking about this subject, and we're going to, you can still go out and use the rest of your data, of course, but it's with this thing. And then you give it some custom instructions in that GPT as well, saying, you know, when I ask you to, like, I could literally just say from one of the books, build me strategy 10 from this book. Huh. Because there's some great books out there that have some really good strategies that, you know, it doesn't mean that you have to trade it as is, but gosh, it's kind of nice to take all of that and just have it done and then start working your own things on it, you know, without having to come up with the idea.
Are you worried about the privacy though?
No.
Of loading up all this data and different edges? Because it's my understanding of this right now, especially with ChatGPT, is once that information is there, it's there forever. And eventually through time, will those edges be erased?
Yeah, probably. I imagine as whether it's uploaded or not, any edge in the market is going to continue to evolve. And also that will create new edges. So
that was also one of my other questions. Do you think, you know, the ChatGPT and the learning algorithms, will this make edges just evaporate faster?
Mm.
The constant evolution of new edges, you know, where you could find an edge and find a market trend and it lasts for years. And now you're maybe talking months or weeks.
Can you blame ChatGPT for that though? Or is that more just a function of electronic trading and high frequency trading in general?
I think it's a technology function
of
everything's getting faster. And whether you're using ChatGPT, there's before ChatGPT, there was, you know, there's plenty of products that just data mined to find edges, and then they find them, and then those edges are gone. So, yeah, we could easily, how many times have we built a system, run it, and then it works all the way straight into, you know, I don't know, summer of 2021, it's just, and then it's dead, and it hasn't ever returned. Or it does nothing, and then summer of 2020, it's just the most amazing strategy that's ever been built. That probably has something to do with just a little bit of money printing.
My biggest question for this whole conversation, do you think a retail trader will still have a place without using some form of a learning algorithm?
Yeah. I think that AI is going to be just a year from now, maybe, you know, whatever period of time, I don't know how long, but AI will be pretty much just a normal part, as Google has been a normal part of our life. A lot of, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about their Uber driver is in Bitcoin or Apple, or talking about Tesla's earnings or something like that, right? As if somebody who literally works from the future in a job so far into the future. If you went back 20 or 30 years ago and you said that there's going to be a dude or, you know, a person who, and not even a person here in Phoenix, these are robot cars. We don't even have drivers anymore here in Phoenix. If you were to tell me 20 years ago that there's going to be somebody who's just going to turn on their phone, go pick somebody up and take them and drop them off and do that, I would be like, that's the smartest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. There's no way technology is actually going to be able to do that.
Dude, just look how quickly, you know, cell phones went from being that crappy flip phone to like the mini computers that you have today.
All the different devices replaced.
How much does it cost now to go get a new phone? How much does it cost to get a new 60-inch television?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the phone is three times more expensive.
It is. Like,
you would have told me that 10 years ago, I would have lost my goddamn mind.
20 or so years ago, I remember that was before, like, you know, like LED TVs and plasma TVs were just coming out, you know, like maybe 25 years ago. It was probably, what, $1,000, $2,000 to buy a TV set. And it was like a 19-inch.
Yeah, yeah.
Big old massive.
Like I still have that Sony, actually. It weighs like 300 fucking pounds.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
And I got, I got like a 60 right here for what, like $300-$400 from Costco.
You know, I was just at Walmart the other day. They had like a 70-inch for like $260. Like, what is going on?
My neighbor across the street, she just bought a 100-inch.
What?
She's like 80.
Jesus.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so the internet was another one I think that was kind of crazy. Like, I think the group here that we have were probably the same. Like, we grew up as it was coming in and becoming a thing. Like, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I know I still look things up on encyclopedias and then transition to being able to use the internet and having it all there at my fingertips. And it's funny how quickly you adopt that technology and then don't even think twice about it. Like you mentioned, ChatGPT has only been around for a couple of years, but I can't write a business email without it anymore, I don't think. Or if I did, I'd struggle. Like, it's nice to have something that can just spit you out at least a starting point. Like, that's always been the hardest thing for me. ChatGPT gives me a place to start with, and I can work with that.
Yeah.
And the crazy part is right now, ChatGPT is basically a toddler.
What do you mean?
Never going to be as horrible as it is today.
Ah, that's the, right.
It's barely, I mean, just like you said, it's barely getting off its feet. It's, you know, it's only been around for a few years, and that's where your mind just starts boggling what happens when it goes into a child or adolescent. Like, what are those stages of development going to really mean?
Terminator 2 is any indication. I know whenever I talk to ChatGPT, I always say please and thank you, just in case.
Well, you should. Honestly, those are actually really good tricks of the trade.
Yeah. Well, I figured at least I'll teach it to be polite, if nothing else.
You know, it's a research assistant that you can put to work 24/7, 365. Like, I could have, I don't know, 20 tab browsers open and having each one of them doing things. It's just as fast as I can go. That's kind of, that's like old technology way of doing it. There's things called agentic. So agentic agents working on your behalf now, where you can say, I need this to be built, and it will come back and say, okay, this as an agency, if you were to say, I need this for my business and I need an agency to go do it for me, the agency will come back with a proposal and say, this is what we're thinking. This is the structure we're going to do it. And this is kind of how it's going to happen. This is what you should expect at the end. And then you're like, yeah. And you hit, you know, hit go. And then the screen splits and it just, you watch it working. Researching these papers, you know, when I got into developing, you know, coding and all that, almost everything was just bespoke. You created it new every time. You started to develop your own library of code that you could reuse. But it wasn't like, oh, I'm just going to grab this library and boom, now I've got everything I ever need. You know, you had to build from scratch.
Right.
So that's kind of what the agents now are at the place where they're just going and grabbing and putting all these things together. Boom, 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 boom. And yeah, it's not going to be in like a 1 minute sort of deployment, but you're actually going to have a, you know, something really massive,
useful,
way more useful, way more research, way more built. Now that's kind of like, that's varsity maybe level of doing the, and I don't want to like that. That's kind of the cutting edge stuff right now.
Yeah.
Probably 6 months or a year from now, we're not even going to notice it. There's other things called chain of models or chain of logic or something like that, where you're actually using multiple LLMs. And so this kind of comes to the point of what I was talking about in that article that I wrote about Apple and whatnot. I think that was the point you brought up, was the Apple one. Okay. Where right now you've got a howitzer. ChatGPT is a howitzer for you to sweep your front porch and, you know, read an email and tell the birds to like, get off my porch here. Or, you know, like it's so powerful.
Get off my front porch.
Yeah. Get off my lawn. It's so powerful, but it can be used for the stuff I can do with it right now. I probably spend anywhere from like 2, 4, 6 hours a day, 4 to 5 days a week with these LLMs, coding,
wow,
building systems, backtesting them, researching, learning, teach me about this. Okay, now teach me as, you know, what does this mean? What does this mean? Create a mini course for me on this so that I have a good enough understanding, then create a quiz to make sure that I know what I'm doing before I move on to the next thing.
That's brilliant there. I never would have even thought of that.
As you spend time with it and you're in the space, you see what people are doing and saying, and it just kind of like, oh, okay, I could try that. And oftentimes you can just ask it, like, how could I use you better? You know, like you.
Man, that's even brilliant. I thought I was genius for using it to help me write a quote for that Boston blockchain project that we're doing. I basically broke down all the services that we're asking and said, here, give me the, you know, range of pricing from low to high end. And it spit me back at a, you know, like a detailed proposal. Like, okay, that'll work.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's very helpful.
That's, I think, using a howitzer to sweep your porch, as you said. Sounds like there's some much better things I could be doing.
You know, for a quick example on that is you could create a custom GPT. If you spend the $20 a month to pay for ChatGPT, I don't know if you can do this if you don't, but whatever. But you can upload some like legal books and some example contracts and things like that into a custom one. And then just, and also the one it created. So you've got a body of work to work from.
Right.
I don't want to get too into the weeds on that. But so these multi-model chain together ones. So if you're saying like, okay, make me a nice paella recipe for dinner. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is asking a howitzer again to you know, do something very, very small. There's other LLMs that are like super small, mm-hmm, and are just like built to be kind of like not too intelligent, but just like, oh, here's 100 recipes. Let's find the best of the best that we can kind of get. And that's what recommendation engines are oftentimes, like Netflix kind of recommends a video for you or something like that.
Is that what Bing's Copilot is too? More like that too?
Well, Copilot, I believe, uses ChatGPT.
Oh, okay.
You're talking like the Bing thing where you do a query in Bing.
Yeah.
And then it says, now would you like me to?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of a way that we're talking about it here is like, okay, I can have all these different ones and I ask it a question and it chooses which one to use.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to go to the most efficient one to solve your problem, right? So instead of wasting compute power on a paella recipe at something big, it's going to use that on another model. And it's going to make that other model that's smaller better because it's being used there. And it's the bigger models are going to be used for bigger things. I'm kind of leading into the whole point of the Apple,
mm-hmm,
the Apple article I wrote, which is the efficiencies of these models are, again, a howitzer to solve any problem. Every model has been built up till Apple did it like this with just massive amounts of GPUs. Mm-hmm. A model couldn't be used unless they went out and they paid millions and hundreds or billions of dollars to get the compute, you know, get the developers to build it and you know, like all the data to scrape and all the data to train it and all these things had to be done. And then they used a GPU, which is just so broad in what it can do. It's a graphical processing unit. And so it was built, GPUs are built to be able to process massive, small voice, video, text, like everything. Just, mm-hmm, it's a howitzer. But when you, but when you know what it is that you actually need to train for, when you have a controlled ecosystem, like, you know, your phone here,
mm-hmm,
and your phone is going to be the one doing the, where all the work's going to be. You're not going to throw a massive Blackwell GP, well, they don't have Blackwells yet, but you're not going to throw like an A100 on your phone because now you're, you know, it's like an old boombox, the size, yeah, that would be the size of your phone with fans on it and everything like that. It's like not going to work. So they have these narrow things And in Apple's example, what it's doing is it's just solving Apple problems for you. You don't ask Apple to cook you dinner and to, you know, drive you to the office. And kind of Apple is just kind of like, be my assistant, make my life easy. When I reach down to do it, get me to where I need to be, the vessel that kind of gets me
right
to what I need to do. But you're not the thing doing it. You're not the Uber car that's mm-hmm. going to, you know, take me to the place. You just summons the Uber car. And so Apple has their own chips as well, like their own processors in their devices that they manufacture that nobody else uses. And so they can just be the best at being Apple, as opposed to using NVIDIA and Qualcomm and Micron and every other chip manufacturer out there that has to make a chip to satisfy 100 people. Apple just has to solve Apple problems. And and so they had that ability to be like, oh, we can just use TPUs here, very specific, application-specific processors to train on just this data that we have. Like, I have my phone, I got my tablet, I got my laptop, I got my desktop, I got a, you know, like an Apple Car or Apple Play, whatever it's called, in the car, my TV,
your Siri,
my watch, my the lady who for somehow has been in our life for 10 or 15 years and not worked hardly at all. But it has, it has this.
It's also the black guy who gives me directions on my wife's phone. I don't know how I got that accent.
Nice. So it just has this ecosystem that's just, it doesn't need to solve every single problem in the world. It just needs to solve Apple problems.
Yeah.
And so that's one quarter of the power for a TPU than a GPU, a tensor processing unit, which is an actual AI. Tensor is an AI method, and Google has, that's kind of where it came out of. Google TensorFlow came out of Google, who is the creator of the Transformer GPT, which the Transformer technology created GPTs and all that sort of stuff. So
okay.
I'm hopefully not doing too much word jumble here, but
it's clear.
It's like, okay, Google has been making this TensorFlow programming library that isn't unique to NVIDIA's chips. NVIDIA has this CUDA programming software, the CUDA software, which is what you control an NVIDIA GPU with, which is like this moat. Mm-hmm. Because the PhDs are all taught on CUDA. They're all taught with NVIDIA chips. That's just what they use in academia. That's just what and then they get to industry, and then that's what they're using, and it's just there. And so it's kind of like, I don't think all three of us are, you know, PhDs in machine learning or artificial intelligence.
You're generous.
And so it's this like, I get to guard my space. You know, I have that moat that's safe. NVIDIA thinking, and then the AI PhDs have that kind of like, well, you know, you have to be able to pay for CUDA and buy GPUs through NVIDIA to get this whole thing working. So there's like this barrier to entry that nobody else really has, until now you've got Google, ironically, has this library in Python that like basically Python is like the simplest, most powerful.
Python is awesome.
Programming language available, open source, right there. You just go, you know, install TensorFlow STS, boom, import, TS, boom.
Is that how ProShot, because one of the guys in our Discord has actually been experimenting with using machine learning logic in his Python programming. So he'll get like a strategy in there, and he'll let the machine learning like manipulate some of the entry and exit criteria to try to optimize the... That's fucking insane to me.
That'll take me... Building a machine learning algorithm right now is like $0 or the $20 it takes to pay for my ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. And I've trained it through one of my books that is a machine learning and AI and algorithmic trading book. And I'll just say, hey, let's do a machine learning swing trading algorithm with a portfolio or day trading, whatever you want.
Yeah.
That we use, let's try XGBoost, let's try Deep4, like whatever machine learning algorithm, let's just try these different ones. Let's try a decision tree of machine learning. Like, you can get super complex, but it you know, it doesn't take much to write that down.
ChatGPT can get you there is what you're basically saying. Like, you don't have to do it from scratch.
It'll say it. And then you say something like, one of the key ways I like to use it is to use it in Google Colab notebook so that I'm using it on a server. I'm not installing it on my own. Like, I kind of recommend this to everybody. Mm-hmm. If you're wanting to get into doing this in like a Python environment, I know I'm spinning off from the Apple thing, but I'm sure this is what people are probably a little more interested in anyway.
Yeah, probably.
let's go. So a free Gmail account, Google Docs, that whole thing, you have access to this thing called Google Colab. So it's colab.research.google.com, I think, or you just go to Google and say Colab notebooks or something. Mm-hmm. And you get a free environment, cloud-based environment to run your Python algorithms on. The easiest ways to get going, and this is what I teach people at in Pollinate, is what I say all the time. I was like, hi, ChatGPT. I would like a swing trading algorithm using Google Colab, and I would like to use free data. So you're not.
So it knows the full like YF library, Yahoo
Finance library. Yep. You're just up and running for free. So walk me through, I don't know how to do this, so walk me through the steps of how to create a swing trading algorithm using all that. It mm-hmm. will step-by-step say, okay, click this link, create your Google Colab instance, paste this in there, hit the play button on everything you paste in there every time you paste it. Well, I don't know what I it's given me an error. I don't know what it is. Paste the error back in there. It'll do, or you're like, what do you mean? Hit play. What do you mean? Just ask it again. Just keep asking it.
One of the issues that Mike and I think have had with, and I see Mike was getting ready to ask the question too, but we a lot of times get stuck in error loops where it'll give you an error and then it'll give you a fix. And then the fix gives you a new error. But then when it fixed that error, it takes you back to the old version, which gives you the original error. And it just gets stuck in that cycle.
And we're not smart enough to figure out the code to understand how to unfuck the loop.
Yeah, exactly. Usually in that scenario, I have to go back and start over from scratch. But is there...
Look, sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's, 10 or 20 minutes to get up and running. Sometimes it's like, 4 hours.
But do you have less of that issue when you do like your priming statements or when you feed it the programming books?
Anything you do with practice, you get better.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
really just keep doing it.
So kind of to Mike's earlier question on, don't you think ChatGPT is just going to like, or LLMs are just going to like, make everything wipe it out. One, your stories that you're saying right here mm-hmm. are the most common responses I get from people about why they don't do it. It's because I get into an error loop. And I
still do it. It's frustrating when you get stuck in one of those.
It is totally.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Most people will get to a point where they get that error and they're like, whatever. I'm going to go back to doing it the way that worked. Or I'm going to try something else or something else. And sometimes... I don't know how, I couldn't possibly share the amount of things that I've like left on the side of the road that were probably awesome algorithms that I just couldn't get to
work,
figure out that the comma wasn't supposed to be there or something like that. It's like, but usually the more you read errors and then you go back and you're like, okay, it's telling me line 62 is the issue here. And so let's copy paste the chunk from line 59 to 65 or something like that in there and say, I'm getting an error in here. What do you think it is? That's one way I like to do it. Mm-hmm. Another way to do it is I'll just start a whole new session. I'll grab all that code. And this is kind of a fun trick. You say you are a senior software developer at a, algorithmic trading company. You're helping a junior developer solve a coding problem to take this software into production. They're having an issue here. Can you review the code and suggest a way to solve the problem or even redo the code for it? So it's just a new instance and it's like something new. That's kind of an older trick, but mm-hmm. different. Another really awesome way to do it is if you run up in ChatGPT, go to Claude.
Yep.
By the way, Claude destroys ChatGPT.
Really?
Right now. Yeah. It is crushing.
Or Bard.
So yeah. Good. Bard's good. Llama's good. But they're all great. They're still better than anything 6 months ago.
They're also better than me trying to just smash keyboards and try to get something functional out of it too.
Way better than all of us combined, yeah. For sure.
That's what always helped me the most was going from ChatGPT to Bard and basically trying to work the loop between the two of them. And they would say, oh, this thing's wrong over here. And then they come back and this thing's wrong over here.
Mm-hmm. I never thought about combining the two of them, but that's not a bad idea.
And then in the Gemini, or in the Google notebook, the Colab there, Gemini is already in there. So it will suggest solutions within the IDE for you. So, you know, you could do Claude, ChatGPT, and then Gemini, and it's kind of like its own solution. What's nice about the using Colab with Gemini in it is, let's say you return results, it runs the script, you get your back test results, and then it like suggests charts for you at the bottom. And you're like, oh yeah, that okay. Let me see. You click on that and it, you know, gives you your distribution of returns, it gives you scatter plots, gives you things like that. You're like, oh, that's actually, I can see where this is like this big fat left tail, and then, you know, it's kind of something off on it. I might be optimizing wrong, or, you know, I might have. So that's kind of the fun part of all of it, is it'll just think ahead for you,
right,
and give those solutions.
When you say Google Colab, is that where you're actually putting like your code into? Is that like taking the function of like PyCharm or whatever, the not PyCharm, but
it's a Python. So one of the biggest challenges that we have is getting Python installed on your computer.
Yeah.
No matter who you are,
it's not fun.
Even if you've been doing it for a while, there's just battles that you're going to have. I can go from here's an idea to running a solid backtest in, you know, a few minutes, assuming the errors are, you know,
right.
The errors of the code are not the issue that I'm solving for using Colab. The errors of installing is why I'm using Colab.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't have everything. It's not to solve every single problem for you. It's just rapid. It gets you from like, you know, how do I actually do this to, holy crap, I can quant the market now.
That right there. Because I think when you try to start something difficult and new like this, and then you just keep hitting roadblocks, but you never actually get to see any results, then you don't stick with it. But if you can get something that allows you to throw something out there and get a result like that, people are going to be more likely to try to continue and keep trying to use it and improve and get better.
Totally.
You need some sort of reward for the effort you're putting into it.
Yeah. And the thing about like using machine learning or using any, you know, because it sounds fun to be able to do machine learning and great. And it certainly is. It's certainly, there's options, but there's a lot of kind of the fun part about doing all this stuff is you realize that the low hanging fruit of just simple systems are available, and it doesn't have to be too darn hard to figure out. And if you do figure this stuff out and you're like, you know, like I find machine learning to be really nice with regimes or in market types, like market profile, volume profile type, like what type of day is it? Oh, it's a short time frame trader day on a natural, a normal distribution or D-shaped day. If I had and you don't even need a machine learning algorithm to do this, but it's just like, if you can figure out that and say, oh, well, we only trade mean reversion on D-shaped days.
Right.
Or we only trade, you know, long only trend on P-shaped, or, you know, something like that.
Inside balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like these little, they're already there. And it doesn't mean that the hard part about doing all that is you got to keep all that in your mind. You got your flow charts on the side and you're like, okay, this is happening and this is happening. And I got to do that. I got to practice and I got to do it over and over and just remember the context of all these different things you can code it into. Like right now, one of the things I do is I just have I'm about 5% discretionary. Mm-hmm. So the last little bit of discretionary is like day trading futures on days that are, you know, there's something to last 2 days were great.
Yeah.
It was just like, click, going about my day.
Yeah.
Outlier days. Yeah.
Today was like, click, okay, let's just run it. Yesterday was just like, okay, it's going too short and it's going to do, you know, back and forth. So you just kind of like, there's going to be probably two opportunities. Boom, boom. So I just create a little, I forgot that, like a panel in TradingView mm-hmm. that just tells me, you know, like what's the average daily volume? Where are we at today? That's like yesterday, average daily volume was 2.5 million contracts on SPOOs, 2.6, something like that. Mm-hmm. After the first hour yesterday, we were at like 200,000 or 300,000 contracts. So right away, you don't even need to look at the chart really or any other stuff. You just know like, well, this is going to be a mean reversion day because big boys are not here. So low mm-hmm. time frame yep. traders are going to be playing the day, right? But that can be turned into a simple algorithm. And then I just turn that into, it's not actually executing the trade for me in that sense. It's just telling me, this is all you need to focus on today, Chris.
The benefit of that is that now all those things that had some sort of nuance behind them, now they're black and white, right? If it's a mean reversion day, that's just a mean reversion day. You don't have any more decision to make there. And that frees you up to make decisions on where you want to put your entries.
Yep. Or do we want to run tight stops or loose stops?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So like that's talking about Python, mm-hmm. but I mentioned TradingView. You can go get TradingView's entire knowledge base in a PDF, turn it into its own ChatGPT just with TradingView's all its knowledge on, you know, TA.MA, how do you do, you know, and say, hey, I would like to have a table across the side that says, you know, this percent that you can get your stats lined up and, or, you know, have it build you a system or something like that. If you want, like there's a bunch of different ways to do it.
Can I ask you a quick question on the custom ChatGPT? Is that how you get around the size limitations of the files you try to upload? Because anytime I've tried to give it anything more than like a couple pages worth of text in the free version, it says it's too big and you can't do it. I think you said you fed it like entire books. Like how do you get it to actually?
I've got something like 25, 30 books. That's the paid version.
It's through the paid version that you can create your own instances.
I don't know if it works on the free version or not, but I know it works on the paid version.
I know it doesn't on the free, but okay.
I have the paid version. I'm not using it to its full potential. I just use it for business letters.
Well, you just convinced me that it's worth getting the full version.
So there's this document roaming around called possibly every trading book ever written. It's a Notion doc. Everybody probably has seen it shared somewhere. Hmm. And it literally is the PDF of excellent, excellent work. So for example, let's say you wanted to write better emails or whatever. Why don't you just go get all of better financial type emails? Why don't you just go get the book that has all of Warren Buffett's annual letters in there and say, just write like Uncle Warren, you know, like, or Marx, or, you know, somebody you like their writing, maybe include a
Mark Halperin, my favorite author.
Nice. So the thing about it is, of course, you know, you can't be commercial with it. Mm-hmm. For me, a lot of the ones that I used are ones that I have the book for, and then they have a PDF. If you like page 412, it says, oh, if you would actually like this in PDF format, here's the link to it. And then go to page 612 and we'll tell you the password. So I've got a number of those that are kind of like these Easter egg, you know, nerd right. games that we like to play. And so that's how I created like my favorite algorithmic trading GPT mm-hmm. was getting those. I don't know everything that's in that possibly every trading book Notion doc, but I'm sure there's a heck of a lot in there. That's probably, yeah. you know,
it sounds like a good spot to start with.
And that's the slippery slope of these LLMs. Like, I mean, my wife's an author mm-hmm. and that's actually a big deal going around her author groups is just that, yeah. that,
her book link, by the way, is in the episode description.
Hey-o.
There are several authors that have found some of their work in other people's work
mm-hmm.
and they're finding out basically, actually, this was,
dude, there's been like authors that have been seeing books come out that they haven't even written. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, and that's exactly what I was getting at. There's, this was a big topic for her like 9 months to a year ago, that they're using free Google Docs,
mm-hmm.
and they're finding their content in the, in other people's books. Oh. With exact phrases to the T.
Like it's been mined out of their Google documents
itself. Yeah. So their free Google documents are being used for the algorithms, and then these authors now are finding their content in other people's books.
Yeah. I've heard of that.
And so that's kind of like the slippery slope of LMMs for specifically. I've heard my wife talk about, you know, why no one wants to create PDF documents anymore. Mm-hmm. Everyone's looking for paid, like, for example, my business has a Google Suite. Our Google Drives are protected to not be scraped by learning algorithms, because that's proprietary business information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where the authors are starting to go that direction. But at the point where they're also highly recommending, like, they don't know, they're trying to figure out this landscape right now, and they're, their best advice right now is to not create a PDF document. Everything has to go onto, like, say, Amazon Kindle, or create a hard copy, and do not create a digital PDF.
Hmm. Yeah.
Outside of paid domains and so forth.
Whatever. Yeah.
Huh.
I think it's pretty simple to actually convert EPUB to PDF, if I'm not mistaken. So that's another challenge, right?
It's a rabbit hole.
It is a rabbit hole. I don't want to get in the technical side of those sort of things, but on the idea,
yeah.
Well, the cat's out of the bag.
Yes,
we can't go back. We can't put it back in. At least I'm going off the assumption that, you know, we're not going to nuke the solution in whatever term. You know, whether that's with atoms or with bits or, you know, however. And so it's just it's a new world.
Yeah.
That's going to change. It, you know, we'll talk about the Gutenberg press. So, you know, we'll talk about that. It was gatekept by, you know, scholars and priests were the only ones who were, you know, able to actually read and pass on the word. Whatever word they decided to pass on to.
Right.
And then of course, you know, when they were able to like print and people started, it changed, you know, that changed the world. It probably is somewhat similar right now. I don't know if it has the impact magnitude of the Gutenberg press, or maybe it's, you know, 10x.
I bet you it does. I mean, you look at how useful and how indispensable it's become in a short period of time. This is like the same level of the web and cell phones. I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. It's just going to become more intertwined in everyday life.
It also, here's a, you know, like all we can do is like parallel it to history to get an, I think,
mm-hmm.
not all we can do, but a lot of what we can do is parallel it to history, other times in history and what we thought and what actually happened. An example that I was given was in like 2008, 2009, when the iPhone like was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, people with flip phones and like Blackberries were like, we've tried that touchscreen thing before. It sucks. Good luck. Yeah.
I got an Nextel, bro.
Right.
Yeah. The push to talk.
That's right. And then one of the next thoughts is designers are going to be out of a job, because you're not going to need real design on a small screen like that, you know?
Right.
And if everything's going mobile, that was kind of like that mobile big shift. And what it did is it like created 100x more designers, requirements for designers, mm-hmm. because now you're requiring for like multiple screen sizes, and it had to like also work on, you know, 4 inches as well as 34 inches and, you know, in all these different ways. So it like created a whole, like CSS is kind of a front end development library that or tool set that you can use to customize the way web or mm-hmm. or graphics are rendered and used and shaped and fonts and all those sort of things. and everybody was just like doing all these custom ones. And so it was like getting big, and then people just started creating their own libraries, and then industries of just this framework of CSS created like new full on businesses that all they did was just like tell you what size font to do this. And I think that's kind of similar to what we're looking at now, because 2 years ago, if you would have said musicians, writers, artists, painters were going to be out of a job because of AI, he would have been like, lawyers, accountants, maybe software developer, probably software developers, definitely not artistic things. And then the first thing that kind of boom, instantly came out and did it.
We've had a lot of fun with the UDO. Yeah, that's insane.
Right, some of the stuff
that thing does.
Yeah.
Okay, but on that note, then where do you see us in 5 years?
Robots doing a lot. There's definitely going to be personal robots.
We can have the flying car.
I think it's 2025 in Phoenix. We're doing a vertical lift air taxi.
I've seen some of those. Like they keep teasing them, but we haven't quite seen them come out yet. It's not going to be like the DeLorean flying around with his Mr. Fusion, but it'd be close enough.
Have you seen the Jetsons quadcopter?
Oh, no.
I've seen a couple of these different ones.
Oh, my God. It's called a Jetsons quadcopter, and it's basically like strapping yourself into a crotch rocket that's a quadcopter. And it's the fastest way I'm going to kill myself if I ever get my hands on one. But, yeah, that stuff's really fascinating to me.
Let me get the image.
Yeah, I think, yes. I mean, so here where I live, we have robo taxis. We've had them for a year, a couple of years now.
Yeah.
They're, you know.
DUI is a thing of the past, finally.
5 years ago, if you would have told me that there will be robo taxis, I would have been like, maybe in 5 years, maybe 10. I think it's probably coming. I don't know. And then it was like 2021, maybe 2022 that it happened. And it was just like, you just saw the cars and you're like, huh, those are the cars. And you're on to the next subject.
I always thought the biggest issue with that would be getting like the transition from having drivers and automated drivers at the same time. That to me always seemed like the hardest part. If you can get everybody doing it, it'd be a lot easier. But there has to be a transition to switch over to that, right? I didn't know that they'd be able to solve that problem.
And that's what blows my mind. We're all former military here, and we all know the Osprey. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you guys know, the Osprey was the most dangerous aircraft ever developed in human history. It's killed more test pilots than any other plane. And it really didn't actually become the Osprey in common use and into service until they had fly-by-wire, which was just the computing power availability to use that.
Right.
And now you have drones and quadcopters that are now integrating into learning algorithms and forward observing radar, and how this is now evolving into, you're taking from one little baby step of fly by wire, now taking it into the advanced level to where we really could have flying taxis.
But like I said, I'm lucky enough to be part of this innovation lab group here, mm-hmm. with ASU, blockchain, AI, humanities, it's kind of law, engineering. It's kind of this cool little group of everybody who, you know, from communists to the most capitalist. It's right. Just kind of, at least you're getting, as you would expect at a university, broad
viewpoints.
Views. Yeah. And everybody allows everybody to speak, which is probably one of the coolest things about like a
didn't know that higher existed education anywhere.
Place. Yeah, exactly. You're like, really? That's a university, you say?
I don't agree with that. Fuck you. Yeah.
None of that. Yeah. None of that. And it's just like, you know, everybody in any other location, it would have been like, oh, here comes the Trump guy. You know, here comes the communist. Here comes Karl Marx. You know, and but everybody just sits there and they're like, okay. And then you raise your hand to speak and you get put on the list, mm-hmm. to when you get to speak. So you don't get a like,
you can't just jump right cool. Yeah.
So I kind of get to see, because a lot of the members in there are esteemed, unlike me, and they get they get brought in on all these cool projects. And, you know, this is how I learned about the vertical airlift taxi, vertical lift air taxi, something like that. I forget what they're called. But yeah, in 2025, that is actually supposed to be a live project here in Phoenix. And, you know, I assume there's going to be pickup drop off locations and, you know, freeways, air freeways that are just like specific.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like pure chaos at, you know, 100 feet above you.
God, I hope so. Better be some goddamn rules that come with these things.
As a pilot, I would concur. I can't imagine.
Yeah. So your question was, you know, where are we at in 5 years? It's kind of hard to guess. I think that robotics is probably going to be the personal robot is probably going to be a thing pretty quickly. There's a couple of projects out there that are doing it. Mm-hmm. And they use AI to do their work. They use the LLMs to, in addition to other types of artificial intelligence and machine learning and whatnot, to do the dishes, to clean your house, to, you know, make dinner, to mow the lawn, to
blow the birds out of the bird bath.
Yeah. You know, all the little things. We already know that industry, manufacturing has been using robots for a very long time. Once you start, and this is what you, Mike, was talking about with that, like, it's kind of this same central database is being trained by all these, you know, the different types of drones and observation and all these things. So right now, let's say you're going to hire, you're a battalion commander or whatever, squadron commander. I don't know the terms of that. And you're looking to bring on, you know, who's going to be the pilot? Who's going to be the gunner? You know, who's going to sit in what seat? And because you oftentimes don't get to choose who comes to your unit. Most times you don't get to choose who comes to your unit. and so
certainly don't.
You know, one of the questions is, okay, how many flight hours have you had? How many flight hours have you had off an aircraft carrier? How many flight hours have you had deployed? You know, like all those questions. And that's an individual thing. That, you know, a 20-year pilot is going to probably have the most accumulated skill and flight time, but also, you know, they're getting a little slower. And so the, you know, the 4-year or the 10-year pilot might be your go-to or whatever. But with the, as we're talking about robotics, now it actually has, if you have 1,000 robots doing the task, now each robot has the accumulated experience. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter which robot you get, you know, just because, you know, Colonel Troutman over here, reference, if you get it.
Good one.
Colonel Troutman over here has, you know, this much experience. He gets the job. Now it's like, oh, this robot for $12,000 is the one I need. Boop.
Right.
As you get to surgery, you know, how many times have you performed this high intense, like super crazy surgery is an interview question you would probably have with a doctor. Whereas you wouldn't need to have that question because now you have every time that Right. type of robot has done it, it just feeds it to the data set.
Plus now it's also way more stable than a human and all the other benefits that come with being a robot.
And infrared and ultraviolet Yeah. and like X-ray Thermal. And like all the things that could be
yeah
that you could that the target shooters used in the Olympics
right yeah except for that Turkish guy.
I've actually
Turkish guy.
That guy was awesome.
It a little off topic, but Sig Sauer now has a rifle scope that does the aiming for you.
Oh, I saw a guy make a bow and arrow that you basically can't miss with. You just pull it back and let it go and it redirects the flight for you.
Sig Sauer has it available right now, and I've seen it.
That's fucking cool. Nice. I'd like to play with that.
I mean, there's potentially units who have potentially been using you know, AI in their nods to fill out the picture, and we're talking about it in an environment where like that should be very accurate.
Right.
and it is. Yeah. It is. So it's like, you know, like I don't know if you guys have ever done the toilet roll nods where you can actually have a field of vision, but they also now they've brought that down to a very small level, and it just knows that, you know, statistically this should be, this is that shape, this is that movement, this is what it's going to be.
Oh wow.
And yeah, it's being like, you're probably, that's probably what the SIG's doing. Back SIG might have made the optic, I don't think
that's
it did,
pretty but, cool
for the nods.
Well, I think we're kind of getting to the end here. Mike, you had one more question you wanted to ask before we wrapped up?
Yes, in tradition of the show, I want to ask Chris, what is his bold prediction for learning algorithms?
Bold prediction.
That we haven't thought of or discussed today.
Yeah, what's something you think it's going to do that nobody's thought of?
Bold algorithm. It's so crazy because it's doing it right now.
The one I had was that it would basically finally decode what the whales are saying, but I think they're actually working on that too with it.
Yeah, I think that's probably,
I don't think that's very bold actually.
It's hard to say because gosh, you're as soon as we hit publish, that somebody will be like, we're doing that.
I know, right? Yeah, I'm just waiting for a new man. Arnold Schwarzenegger movie to come out with like peak Arnold. That's all I want. Give me back that's the 80s move. Man.
Yeah.
Well, what's a bold prediction you see in the next like 5 years? Like not what's capable or what's possible, but let's just say like a bold prediction that you see on the horizon that you think's gonna happen.
AI will be the first governor of Mars.
I think that would probably happen if we do end up.
I know.
End up there, yeah. Right. Let's think of a way smarter way to do government, guys. We'll just right. Put it in there. And we just do a software upgrade.
Just don't give it any nukes.
Yeah. You know, I definitely think it's going to grow the global economy quite a bit. Okay, caveat, and I don't think this anybody really wants this to happen. Just, you know, global thermonuclear war doesn't happen. I think all the participants who have the ability to make that happen.
Yes.
Are in agreement that we don't want that to happen. We you know, show off about it. So as long as that doesn't happen, and as long as we don't actually get, you know, a real cavemaning of technology and society through war, right? Yeah. I think probably anywhere a human is, like you know, in a grocery store that it's like, yes, the checkers are going to be faster than you to check you out, but there's only two lines of those and there's like 16 self-checkouts.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, we've got 65, 74-year-old folks who are not going to ever do that thing over there and they just want to do it. Or there's people that just want to do it that way. Okay, cool. I get that. But I think anywhere that a human is probably an error maker is going to have to be removed from the situation, but there will be humans who are exceptional about certain things and, you know, 1%, 5%ers.
Do you think universal basic income comes as a result of something like that? Because you kind of have to have something if you're going to take away that many jobs, right?
Maybe, but I don't think that you're taking, I think the new jobs are going to be created.
Yeah.
And it may be different how you're compensated. I believe, okay, one big thing is I think cryptocurrency is actually going to have a huge use.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're going to be going into a world of, and I don't think this is like a sweeping statement. If you talk to any crypto person, they're like, meh. If you talk to anybody in you know, traditional finance, they're like, shut up, nerd. but the way for a transaction, a micro transaction, like, you know, you try to get Wall Street or any bank to get up off their ass to do a, you know, quarter of a penny transaction, 382 times a second. Like, they're like, huh?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's like quarter penny in and out, in and out, in and out. And so you code in the logic and it's coded into, you know, I need 0.27 seconds of compute on every, you know, 18 seconds. And I'm willing to pay a fraction of a penny for it. And it, you know, it kind of like goes in and out and all over the place based on tasks where you're, you know, your data centers are like handling the majority of the work there. So I think that sort of environment, you know, is there, which means
almost like you're paying for your processing time kind of thing.
You're paying for transactions. Yep.
Yeah.
And in a transaction sense, I mean, it's like, hi, Chris. Hi, Kyle. Mm-hmm. you know, that's a transaction, not so much money between, right, okay, but gotcha, an interaction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's probably going to be a thing. And I think that kind of moves everything into a different environment. It may end up being a stable coin, a USD stable coin that solves that problem, because mm-hmm, that's currently in use around the world. They're using stable coins in quite a bit of international transactions to, because you can settle immediately as opposed to like a 3-day
and don't have to worry about whatever the SWIFT transactions and all that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that might be a case. I don't know if I need, I don't know if that's a place that I'm thinking. Transportation, I think, is going to, I think absolutely self-driving and
no universal base income.
I don't know, man. I think more it's just going to be different type of income.
Yeah, yeah.
I think your income sources might come from 1,000 different ways of doing it, maybe.
Gig work economy kind of thing.
Probably something to do with that. I think that there will be the opportunity for UBI. I think that that's probably there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are kind of in and out of that.
I almost want to see free energy before I see that. Like, we almost need cold fusion to work out.
If you were to ask me, what is AI going to solve? Big picture prediction would be we find an almost free energy source, and that's what AI solves. And that's where the only way and reason I could ever see UBI ever becoming reality or being a need.
Yeah. Yeah. Because at that point, then there's no need for anything anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the whole purpose of the Apple kind of changed everything, because this was the first use of AI that was focused on conservation of energy, mm-hmm, and capital to perform the task, instead of just going big GPU and big data center and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
It was 1/4 to 1/16 the size and price to train their model. Wow. And they didn't do it like the energy, just using a TPU and a GPU, just out of the box, it's 1/4 the power.
Right, right.
So already we're starting to get to a point to where we can see where energy is less. Right now, if we just keep this collision course of GPU good, big everything, howitzer for everything good, we're going to have to come up with those energy sources.
Yep.
But AI will, you know, kind of, I think I wrote a joke about it, like Elon might have to buy a coal plant to power his big AI and manufacturing empire in order to get all the vehicles to be electric and, you know, getting the, yes, it costs money to build the, yes, it costs carbon and all that to build an electric vehicle. But if it's running 24 hours a day, as opposed to, you know, ICEs, internal combustion engines,
right,
and kind of gets all that out of the road, eventually it gets to a point where it's just electric kind of doing it. And maybe a coal plant is at the better good,
right, right?
If you're doing the, like, is it better to not kill people or kill people? Well, let's not kill people then. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, geothermal, I think nuclear, I think solar continues to.
Solar's getting really impressive.
Finally, the wind's been a, wind's kind of, I don't know what to say about wind. I don't know much about it, but being in the desert out here, we get a lot of exposure to what's happening in solar.
I'm hoping it's something different than we currently have. Like, it's hydrogen, the most abundant resource there ever was. Nikola Tesla's research on gravitational fields, energy, and all those type of,
what about
more the potential
energy you can pull out of a vacuum? Like, even that's got some really exciting potential, mm-hmm, if we could ever figure out a way to harness that.
Well, and then there's the whole other topic of dark energy, space is constantly expanding. And like that rabbit hole, that's where I think AI is like the biggest potential that ever was.
Start finding some answers to some of these things. Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing, you know, like Google's probably the best example of how AI just in the last couple of years has really solved some of the biggest problems that we've, you know, protein folding,
mapping the genome. Game of
Go.
Yeah.
The genome, you know, those sort of things, like they continue to do that sort of research. They're not the only one doing it. Of course, suddenly anybody can do research like what you're talking about. there's some really, there's actually a really good, this is another crypto one, but Brian Armstrong, CEO of Coinbase, is partnered in this, it's a scientific research, open source, crypto-backed research projects where you basically, you know, like, this is the idea I have. Universities have all the assets available in the world, you know, like, to do all the research. And of course, one of the issues is that a lot of universities don't want to produce negative results because their donors are looking for problems to be solved. Negative results are great because it's what you're one step closer to. But so a lot of universities are just kind of like doing the same sort of stuff. And, you know, like a famous PhD researcher at Harvard, MIT or something like that, they're probably not going to want to put their name on the line to go out and get like a bad result. Like they want their lab to keep pushing out like headline stuff. But this place is, you can get the funding, you can get the resource, and it's in a cryptocurrency or in a blockchain type of solution. It's pooled, distributed processing, distributed networks, distributed so somebody like you or I could have access to a virtual research lab where the AI is just, you know, you're not actually pouring the two liquids into beakers and seeing the chemical reaction. Like you're just programmatically doing it, having the AI do it. And so as opposed to raising $5 million to go study this one thing at this big famous lab and do all this work, suddenly it's like, you know, us three, we just decide to go and fire that up, do that research. Somebody's like, yeah, we'll pay, you know, 100 people, 1,000 people. We'll buy the token. Mm-hmm. You know, the appreciation of the value of the token is kind of one of the reasons that they're incentivized to, you know, do this. They'll buy the token and they'll fund the, they'll stake the token on our research. And we go do the research. And then, you know, maybe we take a 10 or 20% cut for doing the research. So that's kind of an example of what I mean by like non-traditional UBI or income type of things. And so it's no longer these big university centers. Now it's anybody who, by the way, I don't have a biology degree. You know, I'm not a chemical engineer. I'm not, you know, a doctor of medicine or anything like that, but heck, I've got, you know, an LLM, which can help me put together, string together, like, okay, hi, I'm Chris. And I would like to put together this research project. How would I do it? Here's how you do it. Okay. Now let's teach me how, what I need to learn to do this. And, you know, and yeah, it may take you time, but like,
it's the great equalizer.
Leverage. Yeah. Leverage. Yeah.
So I think that's probably, okay, that only took like 45 minutes for me to come to it, but I think that's probably a big area where we're going to probably end up, in the sense, like what you're saying, Mike, AI is absolutely going to solve the problems. It just needs to be pointed in that direction to start solving the problem so it can figure out the resources or the mechanisms to harvest hydrogen or...
And the genie's out of the box and it's never going back.
All right, guys. I think that's probably a good place to wrap things up here then. I think we've taken up enough of Chris's time here. Thank you to our esteemed guest, Chris and Purdue, for making time to join in on this one. Glad we're finally able to get you guys connected here. Chris, where can the people go if they want to support your work?
If you want to read really trolley-based tweets, where I like to post major market crashes on the markets closed. They shut the markets down on Friday afternoon. I can't believe they did this. It's all a scam. That's on Twitter at Chris D Macro, M-A-C-R-O. PaulNATrading.com is the newsletter, and I'm far less trolly in the newsletter.
Yes, he is.
I also write at the Twitter and the newsletter, these big articles like that. So those are the two spots. That's it.
Perfect.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, I'll make sure that all that's in the show notes. And the person who clicks on it the most is going to get a free hat. I'll be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully with less false advertising. But until that day, like, rate, subscribe on your way out, and just have a great day.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.